U.S. President Donald Trump signed a defense spending bill in December of 2019 to create the Space Force officially. It's the sixth branch of the U.S. Armed Services and the first new military service since the U.S. Air Force was created way back in 1947. Of the $72 million in funds originally requested for the Space Force in fiscal year 2020, the U.S. Congress granted only $40 million in its bipartisan spending deal. President Trump said during the signing, space is the world's newest warfighting domain, claiming, amid grave threats to our national security, American superiority in space is absolutely vital. And we're leading, but we're not leading by enough. But very shortly, we'll be leading by a lot. According to the NPR, the idea and Trump's provocative statements were widely mocked, providing fodder for the talk show hosts, cartoonists, and comedy writers. Senior military officials have previously raised concerns about what it will cost, and former U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis warned against rushing into creating the force without clearly defined goals. And what exactly are those so-called grave threats that President Trump spoke about? We now present you an article written by Dave Makichuk. The piece is titled, Facing the Inevitable Weaponization of Outer Space. The article has been taken from the AsiaTimes.com website. Please stay with us for more of Dave Makichuk's article. It is apparent that conflicts of the military kind exist all over the world. Despite man's best efforts to create peace, wars continue, and so does the burgeoning arms industry. Five U.S. companies, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, and General Dynamics, accounted for $148 billion and 35% of total top 100 arms sales in 2018. But now there is talk of yet another Cold War space race. And by the way, all those five companies named above would benefit should that occur. U.S. President Donald Trump signed the defense spending bill in December of 2019 to create the Space Force officially. It's the sixth branch of the U.S. Armed Services and the first new military service since the U.S. Air Force was created way back in 1947. Of the $72 million in funds originally requested for the Space Force in fiscal year 2020, the U.S. Congress granted only $40 million in its bipartisan spending deal. President Trump said during the signing ceremony, space is the world's newest warfighting domain, claiming, amid grave threats to our national security, American superiority in space is absolutely vital, and we're leading, but we're not leading by enough. But very shortly, we'll be leading by a lot. According to NPR, the idea and Donald Trump's provocative statements were widely mocked, providing fodder for talk show hosts, cartoonists, and comedy writers. Senior military officials have previously raised concerns about what it will cost, and former U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis warned against rushing into creating the Space Force without clearly defined goals. And what exactly are those so-called grave threats that President Trump spoke about? The so-called counter-space capabilities developed by China include kinetic kill missiles, ground-based lasers, orbiting space robots, and space surveillance to monitor objects across the globe and in space. Electronic weapons such as satellite jammers, cyber capabilities, and direct energy weapons also are part of China's arsenal of counter-space systems. Its space program is also expanding by leaps and bounds, with exploration of the Moon and Mars well within its capabilities. According to the Space Foundation, an American non-profit organization, China's government has made conquering space a key strategic priority, with the nation's reported $8 billion space budget second only to the United States. Meanwhile, the U.S. claims that Russia has successfully tested a space weapon. The device, launched on 15th of July this year, is not a weapon but merely a satellite designed to inspect other satellites. But the U.S. Space Command, USCC, claimed in a statement that the Russians launched an anti-satellite weapon, a very capable anti-satellite weapon. Whatever it is, Russia launched it from another satellite, known as Cosmos 2543, a satellite that was launched on 25th of November 2019. It entered a new orbit, closely approaching but not destroying a third Russian satellite. U.S. Space Command, USCC, claimed that behavior is inconsistent with the system's stated mission. For its part, aside from firing lasers at pesky unidentified objects, flying objects or UFOs, the U.S. has said it does not want to get into conflict that begins or extends into space. But its Chief of Space Operations, General John W. Raymond, said, "Like in all domains, the U.S. military must be prepared for such a conflict, and that will take a lot of preparation." General John W. Raymond said in a Department of Defense report, "We want to deter that from happening. However, if deterrence fails, a war that begins or extends into space will be fought over great distances at tremendous speed." UF Chief of Space Operations General Raymond also said, "To plan for warfare at the speeds and distances required to operate in space, the Space Force must be lean, agile and fast. The new military service has been working on all of those things since it stood up in December." He also drew attention to verbiage on a display at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. On the floors of both the North and South Pavilions are etched the words, "Victory on land, victory at sea, victory in the air." Now, he said, those three domains are no longer enough to ensure victory. He claimed today's security environment requires even more of American warfighters. He said, "I'm not confident that we can achieve victory or even compete in a modern conflict without space power." He added, "I'm not willing to lose in order to learn. Today, the Space Force is answering the call to compete, forging a warfighting service that is always above." What exactly will the Space Force do? According to NPR, Todd Harrison, who directs the Space Security Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said the new service branch, in essence, repackages and elevates existing military missions in space from the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Army and Navy. Todd Harrison said, "It's about, you know, all the different types of missions our military already does in space, just making sure that we're doing them more effectively and more efficiently." Most recently, it drew media attention when it pondered the possibility of sending 3D printers into space to build parts in orbit and repair satellites. Dubbed Arkinaut 1, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration has awarded a $73 million contract to Redwire for its launch in 2022. It also plans to develop space trucks that can haul satellites from one orbit to another, possibly as part of a defensive strategy to make them harder for the so-called adversaries to target. So what won't the Space Force do? Todd Harrison said, "It's not about putting military service members in space. It has nothing to do with NASA. It's not about protecting Earth from asteroids or from aliens. Let's face it, we need a cloak and dagger military struggle in space, to borrow an expression from my mum, just like we need a hole in the head. But we have to do it because they're doing it." That is the sole Dr. Strangelovian argument for a bad idea. America will not tolerate a space gap. Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, is a 1964 black comedy film that satirizes the Cold War fears of a nuclear conflict between the Soviet Union and the United States. There was a time when man looked up to the stars and admired them for what they were, a stunningly beautiful overhanging canopy. It made men dream of going up to those stars, but somehow we have lost our way, and unfortunately, there is much money to be made amid this folly. Professor Melissa does what? The Dean of Law at the University of Adelaide says, growing commercial interest in the mining of precious minerals on asteroids and planets has heightened the danger. She told ABC.net, I think you have to be realistic about that. Where you have resources, where you have competition for those resources, where you have investment of money in the extraction of those resources, there will be an expectation of security around that investment. The Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, JAXA, has already successfully landed a robotic craft on an asteroid and taken samples from the asteroid. Imagine the possibilities of mining gold, mining diamonds or rare earth minerals on other planets or even asteroids. In May of 1972, during the first Moscow summit of the SALT I talks, the then US President Richard Nixon and Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin signed an agreement concerning cooperation in exploration and use of outer space for peaceful purposes, which committed both the former Soviet Union and the United States to the launch of the Apollo-Soyuz test project in 1975. This signaled a significant shift from the combatant nature of the Cold War space race, but it was actually President Jimmy Carter who supposedly broke ground in the era of military space policy. Jimmy Carter signed a 1978 directive that stressed the importance of space systems to national survival, as well as the administration's willingness to develop an anti-satellite capability. The 1978 document helped establish a key plank of US space policy, the so-called right of self-defense in space, and it helped the US military view space as an arena in which wars could be fought, not just a place to put hardware that could coordinate actions on the ground. And then there was the late President Ronald Reagan's ambitious Strategic Defense Initiative, or SDI, which would have used a network of missiles and lasers in space and on the ground to protect the United States against incoming nuclear and ballistic missiles. Known as Star Wars, the initiative cost American taxpayers $30 billion, but no system was ever deployed. U.S. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper noted in January of this year, nations have been in space for many, many years. Mark Esper claimed, it's just been recently that both China and Russia pushed us to the point where it has now become a war-fighting domain. Mark Esper said, as a result, the U.S. has established the Space Command and just recently Space Force to make sure that we can preserve space as a global commons. Esper claimed, it's important not just to our security, but to our commerce, our way of life, our understanding of the planet, weather, and you name it. So it's very important that we now treat it that way and make sure that we're prepared to defend ourselves and preserve space. For another, former President Barack Obama, who ironically was given the Nobel Peace Prize, put the US on track for this when he signed legislation that unsettled the decades-old balance of power among the major nuclear states. The National Defense Authorization Act, a policy bill encompassing virtually every aspect of the US military, contained two provisions with potentially momentous consequences. One provision struck the words limited from language describing the mission of the United States Homeland Missile Defense System. The other related to a provision calling for the Pentagon to start research, development, test and evaluation of space-based systems for so-called missile defenses.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is Viewpoints coming to you from IRIB English Radio.
You're the reason my life's worth living. You're the reason I'm alive. I'd be lost without you. You're the reason that I strive. You're my destiny. You're my revenue.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome, dear listeners. This is Viewpoints on IRIB English Radio. We have a very interesting discussion today, and for our discussion we have invited two very special guests. We have Sheikh Ali and Sheikh Muzaffar on the program. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to both of you.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Good to be here.
It's excellent to have you two sheikhs here, our esteemed scholars of Islam. So we have a really interesting subject which we want to talk about on the program, and this deals with freedom of speech. Now, I'm sure most of our listeners know, but there was this recent case about Charlie Hebdo and this issue about the reprinting of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam cartoons. The cartoons, unfortunately, you know, I'm sure a lot of you have seen, but it has a picture that is supposed to be the Holy Prophet Muhammad with a bomb inside of his turban. And this was actually a reprinting of this cartoon. What ends up happening is that the French president, Mr. Macron, he comes out and he says that this cartoon, which is printed, is because of a freedom of speech. And he says that, well, you know, I can't really condemn this republishing of this cartoon because it is freedom of speech. And so this is a little bit of a background. Another one of the things that Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei says in this talk of his regarding, right, these Charlie Hebdo cartoons, was that this enmity, this republishing of the cartoon, is due to an enmity against Islam, right? Mm-hmm. He says that these Western powers or these Western organizations, they have an enmity against Islam. Yeah, and so this is why, apart from the reason that Sheikh Ali brought up, that this enmity is the reason why they keep on doing this blasphemous and hurtful things. I mean, do you think that this is even true? I mean, really, does the West not like Islam?
Okay, so these two things go hand in hand.
Yes.
We are, like, it is becoming undeniable. In fact, it is undeniable that it is an enemy of Islam. The Western world, collectively, particularly America and particularly the UK, they are the enemies of Islam itself. Not even a particular nation. No, of Islam itself. You see, throughout humanity, there's different types of people. There's some who understand politics more, usually the dads of society, right? They're reading the news.
Right.
Then there are those who are, you know, they're more emotional, right? Like the mums of society, so to speak, right? They react more when, you know, a figure like Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the Ahlul Bayt, are attacked.
Right.
They react to that. Whereas the dads, you know, they're reading the news, they understand the politics of it, right? Either way, whichever way you chime, it is undeniable that this entity is an enemy of Islam and Muslims, okay? Mm-hmm. Because they did it simultaneously. They attacked the holy kind of sanctities of Islam, right? They ridiculed us, they mocked us, right? Through those cartoons. And then they politically made a maneuver to side with the villainous, cancerous entity of Israel, right? Which is occupying the second holiest masjid in the world.
Yes.
The first Qibla of the Muslims. I don't know how much obvious we could really make it. I mean, I think Allah is doing atmam al-hujjah, which is basically to make it absolutely clear so that on the Day of Judgment, nobody can say, oh, I didn't know. No, it's very clear. France, Macron, he's banned the hijab. He's constantly making ludicrous statements against Islam and Muslims. And Trump is Trump. I mean, it's just obvious with him. All the Western leaders are like that, right? Indirectly or directly, they are attacking Islam through the media and through their policies.
And there's a reason for that, right? And the reason is that Islam is the only, and the real Islam I'm talking about, is the only obstruction and is the only barrier for them to be able to dominate the world that they dream to do.
One last point. I want to point out that this isn't new. Okay, this has happened before. The same time that France is making these cartoons, you had another Western country burning the Quran, right? And then they were making that into a big deal as well. This happened back in the day. Do you remember the guy with the animal beard in America? He was burning the Quran, that pastor?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Back in 2006, Imam Khamenei, everybody was looking in that direction. What was everybody talking about? He's burning the Quran, that's it. Yeah. What was the leader saying back then? He was saying that it's the Zionists. Uh-huh. They are, you know, collaborating, they're fomenting plans to besiege the Muslim world. Nobody paid it attention in 2006. But he's been warning us since then.
Sheikh Ali, we were going to talk about this outside the umbrella. What things lie outside this umbrella of Taghut, which was just eloquently described by Sheikh Muzaffar. If you could go ahead and please add your thoughts.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, as like you said, very beautifully explained by Sheikh Muzaffar here, when we look at this perception of freedom of speech, it is pretty prevalent in the Islamic societies and even the non-Muslim societies. They look up to that value and they cherish that value that, you know, we have freedom of speech. But really, if you inspect a little deeply, you will see that it's not freedom of speech. It is the perception of the freedom of speech. Mm. Now, when we say that perception, yes, it is real, that it's something that you can exercise. Like, you know, we said, you can challenge whether there is a God or there is not a God. And then you can also bring up the question, why can there be no two gods? Why do we have to have only one God? Then you can also talk about, you know, the prophethood, you know, what's the point of having prophets? And then unfortunately, Western society and Western civilization has gotten to a point where they have associated evils to the prophets of Allah.
Like, right,
for instance,
right.
There are movies made about Prophet Jesus, Prophet Moses, yeah. Right? And there are things that we do not consider to be at par with the reputation and with the dignity and with the holiness of the prophets of Allah. But all of that falls within the confines of that perceived freedom. Mm. Now, what are the things that you are not allowed to exercise? And if you do, you have a price to pay.
Right.
Well, in today's time and age, let's take a few examples, right? In today's time and age, if you look at people who we brought up previously too, the Snowden, right, who had to flee because of what he did. You know, he was a whistleblower who worked at NSA and previously CIA-trained officer he was. Mm-hmm. When he realized and understood what the system of Tawhid that was explained previously is doing,
right,
he had to pay the price for it. His citizenship was revoked, and he had to flee the United States of America, for instance, right?
Yeah. By the way, I just want to add a point there. A lot of his concerns were about the right to privacy of the mm-hmm. American people mm-hmm. and people of Europe as
because people were being spied upon, right? Mm-hmm. They were being looked into their lives without their consent.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, this is immoral.
So right? What he was doing is actually in the interests of the people themselves.
Correct.
But he was still, yeah.
Correct. So, you know, this is something that falls out of the that whole umbrella of perceived freedom of speech.
Right.
Then you look at people like... So when you look at people like Norman Finkelstein from a U.S. professor who right. used to teach at the, I believe, University of Chicago or one of the universities in Chicago, he's an anti-Zionist Jew, right? His mm-hmm. parents are a mm-hmm. Holocaust survivor, right?
Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, you look at him speaking up against the Zionist regime of Israel,
really?
And he has to pay the price. What is the price? His career, complete career, was fried and toasted. He was just, you know, kicked out of the university, not been able to lecture at any other university, and his academic career, he's a professor, he's a doctor, right?
Right.
He had to pay the price for it. Then you look at, you know, this sister in UK, Kate.
Dr. Kate Godfrey-Fawcett.
Right. So she did a research on LGBT against the evils of LGBT and this growing culture in the West. And she's a UK citizen, born and raised in UK. She's white, right, as white as you can get. But when it comes to her exposing the LGBT agenda that is being implemented and exercised in the UK as we speak, she had to pay the price.
And
what was the price she paid?
Oh, her career was completely destroyed. Her means of livelihood was taken away from
and
her.
She was
her credentials were taken away.
Yes.
And I just want this to be on record as well. She didn't give her own opinion. She just took what was available of the information of what they're going to be presenting and gave it to people.
So this takes us to this next level, that as soon as you and your research and your efforts, they become fruitful and they become influential in order to affect the society, they come after you.
Yeah.
You don't have that right of exercising freedom of speech anymore. Yeah. But if you're saying whatever you want to, living in the West, you're allowed to say that.
Yeah.
Right?
And by the way,
you mobilize people.
Yeah, I just want to make this clear as well. See, the examples of Julian Assange and Ed Snowden, who were Snowden, who are all victimized by those systems, people might say, oh, well, they were political. They did something politically. They revealed, for example, the plans of the CIA, and, you know, they posed a military threat for the country, etc., right? What about somebody like Dr. Kate Gordon-Forsett or somebody like Norman Finkelstein? They didn't reveal anything like
that. It's again a long discussion. Yeah. This LGBT is a political agenda. People think it's not political in nature. It is a political agenda. There is politics behind it, and the politics is to make a force, make a generation that stands up against the religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
It's, again, that same religion and politics being one.
Yeah.
We cannot segregate the two, right? Now, we have too many examples like that. You know, Malcolm Chavez, he was killed in Mexico.
Right.
Why? Because he was being influential against the United States of America, its government, and its cohorts, right?
I'd say that he was potentially very, very powerful because he was the grandson of Shahid Malcolm X.
Malcolm X, right. So they could see through, you know. They were seeing that his, and incidentally, you know, we were together at Hajj, one of these Hajj, you know, 10, 15 years, 12 years ago that I went to. Allah blessed me with that opportunity. We were in that same caravan, right? And I had an opportunity to talk to this guy. Very decent guy, deep guy. He was looking for truth, and he was exposing the truth as he found it.
Right.
He was killed mercilessly in Mexico at the hands of who? We know who.
Yeah.
It's FBI and CIA, a joint venture, right? Why was he killed? Because he was waking people up.
Right.
Right? And he was being influential, especially in the African-American community and the black community, right? So, you know, there's so many of these examples that we can keep going and talking about. All of these things. You ask a question about Holocaust in Europe. You challenge the authenticity, or, you know, you just want to do academic research on the topic of Holocaust. Look at the repercussions of people who had gone down that route.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, I never thought much of this whole idea of Holocaust denial. Have you ever looked into it a little bit? It's quite scary. The whole idea of 6 million Jews, 6 million Jews, this phrase, 6 million Jews, it appeared way before even World War II. Did you know this?
No.
In newspapers like the New York Times and New York Post and stuff.
It's a victim
card. They mentioned
it
already. How could they have... before Hitler was born, how could they have done that?
Yeah,
right.
It's a theory that they came up with. It was something that they planned for to be able to, at a very surface level, at a minimum level, to play a card of being a victim, right? And as a result of that, they wanted to get the sympathies of the rest of the world so they could establish the Zionist regime in the heart of the Islamic lands and take over Palestine.
Right. Dear Sheikhs, Shuyukh, we have run out of time on today's program. Very interesting discussion. Islam, the only obstruction to Satan's domination of the world. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Viewpoints. If interested, please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Call of Islam page, and also don't forget to visit our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. From Sheikh Muzaffar and Sheikh Ali and everyone in the studio, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Viewpoints. You can log on to our website at parstoday.com, and you can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, goodbye.
A symphony of nature. Oh, it's taken my breath away. I'm so blessed out here today, yeah. Allah, 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 Allah. I see the sun, the stars, the moon. I join them all in praising you. Allah, Allah.
food for thought.
Salam, and here are words of guidance from the Prophet of Islam that are food for thought for Islamic unity. On the resurrection day, no foot of a servant of Allah will move before being asked about four things: the years and how they were spent, the body and how it was used, the wealth and how it was earned and spent, and about love towards us, the Ahlul Bayt.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, dear brothers and sisters, salam and welcome to this episode of today's special. We open the calendar. Today, Saturday, is the 14th of Rabiul Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 10th of Aban, 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 31st of October, 2020 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As usual, we open today's special by the recitation of chapter Al-Imran, verse 19. We'll listen to it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. إن الدين عند الله الإسلام وما اختلف الذين أوتوا الكتاب إلا من بعد ما جاءهم العلم بغيا بينهم ومن يكفر بآيات الله فإن الله سريع الحساب.
Indeed, the religion in the sight of Allah is Islam. And those who were given the scripture did not differ except after knowledge had come to them, out of jealous animosity between themselves. And whoever disbelieves in the verses of Allah, then indeed, Allah is swift in taking account.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Dear brothers and sisters, the spirit of religion is the very submission to Allah. Next to the statement of the unity of Allah, the Quran refers to the oneness of religion. Thus, the true religion with Allah is surrender, or the submission of the self of adherent to the will or command of Allah. The spirit of religion, in fact, in any time and period, is not anything but submission to divine will.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, except Al-Habib. Ummati, Ummati, yaquluha lana yawm al-qiyamati. Ummati, يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها.
Today we're going to speak about peace based on justice. If we want to study Islamic peace, we shall have to do so in the framework of the overall Islamic ideology. Islam is, in a manner, a single entity. We should not look at any Islamic concept in isolation. We must have the whole structure in view. We may describe the whole Islamic ideology in one word: justice. God has laid the foundation of Islam on justice. Justice has been defined as putting a thing in its rightful place. A judge does justice when he awards or restores a disputed item to its rightful owner. This brings us to the concept of peace. When everything is kept in its rightful place, when every member knows not only his rights but also his duties towards others, then peace resides in society, and the society works smoothly like a well-balanced watch. It is what we call balance, harmony, and equilibrium.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. Islam as a religion cannot be devoid of the crucial aspect of people's social communication or intercourse with each other. Although all religions, at least all the divine religions, share the point of people's individual relation with the Creator, with the Deity, with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in terms of the Islamic religion, In the domain of all religions, we find that the Islamic religion has maintained a special emphasis on not only the individual or personal aspect of life, rather on the social aspect of human life. In fact, as people, I mean, people need each other for life because of this essential and absolute social need, the Islamic religion has since stressed on peaceful relations with other people. This stands in contrast to the efforts of some Orientalists who have tried to associate the face and fate of the Islamic religion with the sword, with blood shedding, with the dissemination of Islam, not in terms of articles of faith or the creeds, rather by the force of the sword. Now we find that in the Islamic religion, the best source and the most reliable text, standard text, reference text, according to which everybody may come up with a good understanding of the basic and essential teachings in the Islamic religion, is nothing but the Holy Quran. In the Holy Quran, we find that people, I mean, in the pre-Islamic age, or even in the Islamic age, whenever some people wanted to kindle the fire of military conflicts and contestation and war, it was Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala who extinguished the fire of war.
You are with today's special and now amazing tips to become a better Muslim. What is today's tip? Keep away from debates and argument. Verily, Prophet Muhammad, the last prophet of Allah, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his pure progeny, said, "Verily, anger spoils faith as aloe spoils honey." Trying to constantly defend your religion is something that will cause you a lot of stress. This may happen to different people at different levels. The best thing to do is avoid these arguments at all costs. If you are mature about your religion and display a desire to explain yourself without refuting others, then many doors will open for you. You are bound to give someone a refreshing view of Islam, which is what so many people are hungry for after seeing Islam in such a negative light in the media. Staying away from these discussions will put you at peace. A lot of converts are not really comfortable with bringing up their religion because of the backlash they receive. If we just mention it when necessary, we get a more positive reaction. You'll be surprised to hear, "Oh, that's cool, dude. What made you pick that religion?" This is always an opportunity for inviting to Islam.
You came to me in that hour of need, when I was so lost, so lonely, religion came to me, took my breath away, showed me the right way, the way to lead. You filled my heart with love, showed me the light above. Now all I want is to be with you. You are my one true love, taught me to never judge. Now all I want is to be with you.
Things you need to know to understand Islam. One of them is the Quran. The Quran is the Islamic holy book. The Quran is the holy book for Muslims and is made up of the teachings especially for Muslim believers taught to Prophet Muhammad by the angel Gabriel and Allah, the Almighty. Parts of the Quran are recited every day in the five daily prayers for Muslims, and the actual book should not touch the ground. Among things you need to know to understand Islam, and Muslims also believe in the Bible and the Torah. In addition to the Quran, Muslims are believing in the Bible that the Prophet Jesus preached, as well as the Torah that the Prophet Moses brought down to earth. However, because Prophet Muhammad is the last of the prophets to bring down a religious book in the eyes of the Muslims, they see the Quran as the most perfected and final one out of the three.
Today, all over the news, we hear slander and bad talk against the religion of Islam, against the values of the Muslims, against the prophet of the religion of Islam, and against the Muslim buildings, even the mosques. All over the news, wherever you go, you see talk against Islam. People accusing Muslims of being terrorists, people accusing Muslims of being violent. You see this wherever you go today. Where Muslims want to build a mosque, they find it very difficult to build a mosque. We today as Muslims find ourselves being victims of terrorism. The terrorism that's being done by others, we are the victims. We are the ones who have to pay the price for this. Every day, wherever we go, every time we turn on the news, we have to pay the price for that. So now, what can we do about it? We have to do something about it. The majority of the Muslims are not terrorists. The majority of the Muslims are not killing people and blowing up people. It's all stereotypes. So what do we do about it? What's our duty? Our duty is to educate ourselves, and after educating ourselves, we will be able to educate others. We'll be able to teach people about the true religion of Islam.
Dear brothers and sisters, you can follow these discussions, these parts, on the next episode of today's special, inshallah. Till then, wassalamu alaikum.
Lost and hearts frozen from your Allah came a prophet chosen. Less prophets, Muhammad, obedient to you, taught us the things we are to do. Muhammad, ya Rasul Allah, Muhammad, ya Habib Allah, Muhammad, ya Nabi Allah.
you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.